These are all of our stories. These are who we are as Americans.
Freedom leads to prosperity. Freedom is the victor.
This is the podcast of Grassroots Radio Colorado with your host, Chris Cook.
And welcome. I am Chris Cook. You're listening to the Grassroots Radio Colorado podcast. And I hope you had a great weekend, and we're going to have a lot of fun this week. Tonight, I wanted to cover a question that I received from one of my listeners. And you can do this too. If you have questions or things that you want me to cover, I love hearing topic ideas from you guys, because it saves me a lot of time to be really frank with you. And I want to know what's on your mind. I mean, what are the questions that you want answered, and what kinds of things are of interest to you? So let me know. Chris, K-R-I-S, at grassrootsradiocolorado.com. That is the email you can send me. And that's the email that Jay used when he sent me this question. He says, I have an idea. With all of the hubbub about the county clerk in Kentucky, and that would be Kim Davis, I am reminded of something I just don't understand about the judicial system. Current Kentucky state law says that marriage is between a man and a woman. The Supreme Court issues an opinion stating that the states must not deny marriages to same-sex couples. Where is the connection between the Supreme Court opinion and the still-on-the-books marriage definition of law, or law defining marriage? Shouldn't there be some sort of official action to negate the Kentucky law if the Supreme Court decision really does render it null and void? And then he says, and if it's an opinion, why do some bodies, for example, a federal court, take that as authority to incarcerate a violator without any further governmental process to resolve the conflict between the ruling and the law? It seems kind of arbitrary. So, and Jay has done his research, so he forced me to do some research as well. I'm going to attempt to answer all that. I'm going to give it a shot, but I want to give it a shot with a huge caveat. I am not a lawyer, okay? I play one sometimes, sort of. I'm part of the legal team, but that does not give me a background in constitutional law. Everything that I know about constitutional law has come through my political activities, through having Professor Rob Nadelson on my show, through, you know, speaking with lawyers, which I do a lot, but having that kind of a background, and having that background in constitutional jurisprudence, not the thing that I have for any sort of formal training in. It's just sort of an avocation. So take all this with that in mind. This is what I'm finding through my research and so forth. I tried to give myself a little mini course in the law in order to be able to answer Jay's questions. So let's just, with that, again, with that caveat, let's just try to take it from there. We've got a few different things going on here. There's a few different principles that are at play. One is the Supremacy Clause in the Constitution. That's Article 6 of the Constitution. It says, the Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary, notwithstanding. Now, I am not going to address that last part because I'm not entirely sure how all this plays into it, and I haven't been able to find the laws of any state to the contrary, notwithstanding, how that is an exception. Basically, what I'm finding is that this is a conflict resolution clause within the Constitution. The Constitution did only have certain enumerated powers. Where what the founders were trying to do, what the framers of the Constitution were trying to do, was to make sure that if the Constitution, the federal document, was in conflict with a state law that directly went to the issue and that you could not comply with both, which one would reign supreme? And the Heritage Foundation points out that there's three different strategies for dealing with conflicts of this kind. First, what you could do is you can give exclusive jurisdiction to each government over its respective sphere. So that would, in theory, avoid the possibility of direct conflict. So, for example, the way that I interpret that, the federal government would only have power to deal with foreign entities. They would only be able to deal with treaties and national defense, for example, and would have absolutely no jurisdiction whatsoever within the states and governing what's going on in the states. So that would be one conflict resolution approach that the framers could have taken. A second one is that the governments could have some sort of concurrent jurisdiction. In other words, they can both rule over the same like geographical area, or you know, they'd have the same jurisdiction. But one government could be given power to veto the other. And so that would be the states could veto the feds, and the feds could veto the states. That would have been interesting, and that would have been a very interesting way to do it. But that's not the way that our framers went. What they did is that both governments could be allowed to act without mutual interference, but one government's acts could be given primacy over the others in the event of an actual conflict. And that is the direction that the framers decided to go. And it was actually, interestingly enough, it sounds like it's giving more power to the feds, but this was one of the proposals that came from the anti-federalists, the ones who were against a very strong centralized government. So this is the way that they went. And part of the reason, I believe, for that being the direction that even the anti-federalists went is because they saw the enumerated powers as being very restrictive. And they understood the Constitution. I think all of the framers understood the Constitution to be a very restricted document, that it was we the people granting to the government, the federal government, the power to do things in a very limited set of circumstances. And so if within that limited set of circumstances, and the reason why they were giving the feds that much power, you know, the power that they did enumerate to them, was because that was the way to ensure the most amount of freedom for the states. That was how they saw this entire system. They were not trying to set up a monarchy. They were not trying to set up this monstrosity that we have now, although that's what we've gotten from it. But what they saw, what they envisioned at the time that they were framing the Constitution, was the federal government was only going to play in these certain sandboxes. And we were giving them those sandboxes because it was unwieldy or unwise to give those sandboxes to each of the states as they stood at that time. Each of the 13 states at that time, of course, would be 50 sandboxes at this point in time. And if we were trying to negotiate like a treaty with another nation, you couldn't do it. You could not do it with 50 different sandboxes, you know, 50 different states saying, oh, no, the treaty needs to say this, the treaty needs to say that. That's not the way it's going to work. So we gave that to the feds. We gave that power to the feds. And if we were in conflict, if any state was in conflict with one of the sandboxes where we were telling the feds that they could play, then the feds would have supremacy. That is why they went the direction that they did in Article 6 of the Constitution, the Supremacy Clause. So that's one of the gears that we've got at play here in this Supreme Court decision regarding gay marriage. Another one that we've got is judicial review. And this was established in 1803 in the Supreme Court decision of Marbury versus Madison. And judicial review is the idea that legislative and executive actions are subject to review by the judiciary. It's part of the checks and balances that we have set up within the Constitution. So the court with judicial review power can invalidate laws. They can invalidate decisions that conflict with the Constitution, that they are incompatible with a higher authority. And of course, the Constitution is, as we just reviewed, the supreme law of the land. So the Supreme Court has the ability to look at legislative and executive actions, say this is or this is not in alignment with the Constitution, and to determine that they are unconstitutional. Again, it's the separation of powers. It's the check and balances. Then we've got the legislative branch with the executive branch, the judicial branch. They are all supposed to act in somewhat in opposition to one another so that no one single branch gains too much authority. Again, sort of not exactly where we're at right now, but ideally, in the vision of the founders, this is what they were going for. And it was a pretty good system that they set up. It was better than anything else that we'd ever seen on this earth. So, I think theoretically, it's beautiful. In practice, it still works politically. And that's, you know, no men are angels or else we wouldn't have to have governments, right? So there you go. So we've got the supremacy clause, we've got judicial review, we've got the ability of the Supreme Court to determine whether or not a state law or legislative actions are in conformity with the Constitution. The third thing that we are looking at, and the thing that this decision, the Hodges decision from the Supreme Court that legalized gay marriage, I'll use that phrase for now. We'll talk about that in a little bit more depth in a minute, is really the 14th Amendment. And the 14th Amendment is coming under a lot of fire these days. Now, of course, the 14th Amendment to the Constitution was intended to bestow full citizenship on the recently emancipated slaves. And that's the timing of it. That's what it was about. It's about citizenship. It's about equal rights. The 14th Amendment is also where we got Roe v. Wade. The 14th Amendment is also where we have birthright citizenship and people flying here from other countries so that their children can have U.S. citizenship, flying here, walking across deserts, whatever. And so, you know, there's a lot of abuse, I think, of the 14th Amendment. Obviously had a very, very good intention, but the way that it has played out has not been so great. And the biggest problem with it is actually in the second sentence in the first section. It says that no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. So that's in three parts. It says, you know, people are supreme is a lot of the sentiment of this, that the states cannot deny you your rights, your natural rights. The states can't deny you of your life, liberty, or property without due process. And they can't deny equal protection of the laws based, for example, on your skin color. That was the intention. Of course, the expansion of that, you know, the based on has expanded quite greatly. But at the bottom line, I mean, if you think about it from a political philosophical point of view, what's the smallest minority? What is the smallest minority? It's the minority of one, okay? So my rights are just as equal as anybody else's rights. It doesn't matter if I'm a woman, doesn't matter if I'm black, doesn't matter if I'm gay, doesn't matter any of that, does not matter. I have equal rights with everybody else. It also doesn't matter if I'm Christian. It doesn't matter if I you know, don't believe that I have to serve everybody who walks through my door. It also applies to those folks as well. And so we'll talk about the Civil Rights Act, because that's really kind of where all this comes down to play, in my opinion. So those are the three interlocking gears that we're trying to get moving in the right direction here. We've got the Supremacy Clause in the Constitution. We've got judicial review established in Marbury v. Madison. And we've got the 14th Amendment and the equal protection of laws. And that's really, I mean, that's kind of the basis for our country, isn't it? The equal protection of laws. It's really kind of the basis for what we're doing here. It's the rule of law, not the rule of man. And that's where we're going from. But the question is, how do you figure out what in the heck the law is at any single point in time when you've got these moving targets, you've got these interlocking pieces, you've got federal, you've got state, you've got states' rights, you've got constitutions. The 10th Amendment is another piece that's in all this, and that states are allowed to set their own state agenda, more or less. I mean, you know, the people of those states are allowed to say what goes on in that state. But the way that the 10th Amendment reads is that if it's not given to the federal government, it's reserved to the states or to the people. Okay, so again, we're back to we the people. So I want you guys to keep that in mind. When we come back, we'll talk about how all these things came together in the Hodges decision and how they play out in Kentucky. I'm actually going to reverse my position on something that I put into an earlier podcast. So you're going to want to stay tuned. We'll be right back.
It's a game, I feel like going home now, now, now. Fails and turns
and that is a tune called Lorenzo, from Lorenzo's Music. It's called We All Fall Down. Find that at freemusicarchive.org. If you have suggestions, if you find copyright-free music that I can use in my podcasts, I'd love to hear your suggestions, because maybe we can open this up to, you know, like local bands and stuff, you know, people who would be willing to be part of this. If you have a band, let me know and I can sing. So we'll get it all worked out. Anyway, this is Chris Cook. You're listening to the Grassroots Radio Colorado podcast. And we're talking tonight about a question that I got from a listener. And let's review the question real quick, because it really is a good one. And of course, I can't find it now. Well, he's basically asking about how the Supreme Court decision intersects with the Kentucky law. Okay, so the Kentucky has a constitutional amendment on their books defining marriage as between a man and a woman, one man, one woman. And of course, the Supreme Court issued a decision earlier in the summer in Hodges, stating that no states can deny the right to marry to homosexual couples. And so that creates a conflict between, obviously, federal interpretation of law, which is law. You know, the judiciary can interpret how things are supposed to be intersecting with the Constitution. So a lot of people say, well, the Supreme Court can't make law. No, they're not making law, but they're interpreting whether or not something is constitutional. And if they determine that something is not constitutional, it's not making law, it's determining that the law that exists is not valid because of the Supremacy Clause in Article 6. We talked about the Supremacy Clause. We also talked about judicial review, where the Supreme Court has the power to review executive and legislative decisions to determine whether or not they are in conflict with the Constitution. And so we're talking about this. And of course, the decision in Hodges was based primarily in the 14th Amendment to the Constitution. The 14th Amendment, the second sentence of the first section is the one that's problematic. Not problematic. I mean, it upholds the things that we believe in as principle, that are principles, things we believe in as conservatives, that no state shall make or enforce any law which abridges the privileges or immunities of the citizens. It's the supremacy of the individual, we the people. Nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without the due process of law. So the states cannot violate your individual rights. That's what this is saying. Nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. Rule of law, not of man. Okay? And so that is what we are looking at here. And these are things, and those, the three sections of that piece are things that we vehemently believe in as constitutional conservatives. We don't believe in mob rule. We do not believe that the majority decides for the minority what's going on. And so I find myself in the uncomfortable position, the exceedingly uncomfortable position of actually agreeing with something that Justice Kennedy said. And I never, ever want to do that, but darn it, he made sense in this sentence. Let me just put it out there that way. The Kennedy opinion, which was the majority opinion for the Hodges case, he made two points in there that I think are really, really important to keep in mind. The court has long recognized the right to marry as a fundamental right. They have long recognized that, okay? Second point he made is that the very reason we have a constitution is that some rights are too important to leave up to the democratic process. So if majority of the citizens of the state of Colorado decided that nobody in the state of Colorado should own a gun, that's a fundamental right guaranteed to us by the Second Amendment, but it is a fundamental natural right to self-protection that we own. We have that. It is unalienable. It is part of who we are. Simply by virtue of us being humans, we get to defend ourselves against other citizens and against our government. That is what the Second Amendment is about. Okay? And so even if a majority of the citizens of the state of Colorado decided to take away your guns, that doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it constitutional. Okay? So I want you to keep that in mind. And you know, the same arguments, see, here's the thing. The same arguments we hear against same-sex marriage are the same arguments the other side uses against things like the Second Amendment on our right to keep and bear arms. It's the same kind of arguments that, well, the people decided, and that's the case, you know, and it's the law of the land, and, you know, whatever. I mean, this is the stuff that we have to keep in mind. We do not want to be intellectual hypocrites. We want to have intellectual integrity. I covered that at length in a podcast last week. We want to have intellectual integrity. We want our stances to coincide with each other, to be based in the same principles and not to contradict one another. And so we want to be very careful of that when we are talking about something like gay marriage, when the same arguments that we are using against allowing for gay marriage are the same arguments they can turn around and use against us for things like our right to keep and bear arms. We all have rights. We all have rights. I've been referring for years to the three-legged stool of liberty. We have the right to life, liberty, and our minds. We have the right to own our bodies. We have a right to do the things with our bodies as long as they do not interfere with other people's rights. And we have the right to think as we will and to make decisions based on those thoughts. Those three things work together for property rights. We use our mind, our body, and our actions in order to create property and inure that to ourselves. We get to own that because it comes from our liberty. It comes from who we are. Okay, so we've got to remember that those are the things that we have. The right to conscience is the one that is really at dispute here. The right to a conscience is what's really at dispute. Now, let's look at what is, and let's look at what should be in Kentucky and in the United States as regarding gay marriage right now, okay? Now, what is that under the 14th Amendment, according to the Supreme Court, according to the majority decision of the Supreme Court, they decided that all citizens should have equal access to the civil rights and privileges of marriage, okay? Regardless of what their sex is. As near as I can tell, again, I am not a constitutional lawyer. I'm not a lawyer at all. I have never taken a constitutional law course. This is based on my knowledge gained through studying, talking to lawyers, trying to understand this stuff as a constitutional conservative. I think at its base, I'm pretty much right that Hodges was decided because they decided that all citizens, regardless of sexual orientation, should have access to civil rights and privileges. Okay. I want to make this clear. I agree with that decision. Okay. And that's going to earn me some hate mail. I know that it is. I agree with that decision. Now, how that plays in with the Kentucky law and the Kentucky courts is this. There was an article that came out in the American Thinker today, well worth checking out. It's by a guy named Monty Kuligowski, and the name of the article is "Stop Saying Same-Sex Marriage is the Law of the Land," and he put that in quotes. He quotes Mike Huckabee's argument here, and I think this is actually brilliant. I had not heard this before. I wish I'd been paying more attention. I tend not to pay a lot of attention to Mike Huckabee. Maybe I ought to. I'm going to read this section to you because it's beautiful. Governor Mike Huckabee's response is creative, and it shocks the automated thinking of the jurists. Huckabee is pointing out that Kim Davis should not have been held in contempt of court. She should not have been thrown in jail because there is currently no law a court could order her to obey. Huckabee asked the question, under what law does Kim Davis have the authority to issue same-sex marriage licenses? Now, I'll grant you that wasn't why she was not issuing them, but he's right. There was no law to compel her to obey. So the argument is legally valid. The judiciary's role is to decide individual disputes between parties. This is, again, quoting from the article. The courts, including the U.S. Supreme Court, they do not write the laws. They operate under this mistaken notion that all high court rulings somehow automatically become the law of the land. However, sometimes laws have to be rewritten by the legislatures to comply with the U.S. Supreme Court rulings. So this is the key. This is how all of this comes together. Kentucky law has not yet been changed to redefine marriage and authorize its local clerks to issue same-sex marriage licenses. Until that happens, clerks in Kentucky who are granting such licenses are doing so, and this is the author's phrase, out of gratuitous deference, not legal obligation. I thought that was well stated. If the U.S. District Judge Bunning, the guy who threw her in jail, were to give this legal reality some honest reflection, he might get the cold sweats because he wrongly held Ms. Davis in contempt and took away her liberty. Now, I hadn't thought that deeply into this intersection between the Kentucky law and the Supreme Court ruling and how all of that came together when I did my podcast on Kim Davis. Now, I do not truly believe, and now we'll get to the what ought to be. I do not believe that the court or the state should be in the business of telling us who we can and cannot marry in the first place. That's not the state's role. It's not the legitimate role of government. Nowhere in the Constitution does it state that the states shall give permission, because when they're giving, what is licensing? I've seen this, a couple libertarian memes go on where they steal from you the right to do something and then sell it back to you for a fee. I mean, that's they steal your liberties from you and then sell them back to you for a fee. The state has no right to issue marriage licenses. They can't tell me who I can and cannot marry. Okay? That's the church's role. That is the church's role. The church determines who may and may not receive the sacrament of marriage. Okay? We have a longstanding civil tradition of marriage in you know, throughout American history, going back into England. I mean, it's a longstanding civil institution as well, but it is not the job of the government to tell us who we can and cannot marry. Now, I want to take this in a different direction, though. Okay, so I've issued my apology. I was wrong on Kim Davis. She should not have been thrown in jail. I have now been convinced. So. Take that for as it, you know, what you take that as it may, however you want to do that. Here's the other problem, though, is the 14th Amendment. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States or deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. Does that only apply to same-sex couples and minorities? No. Not at all. Not in the least. All citizens, any citizens, any person within its jurisdiction. And so for the state to infringe on the rights of Jack Phillips over at Masterpiece Bakery and tell him that he had to give up his free exercise of religion so that somebody else could have a wedding cake, give me a break. I mean, come on. That's, talk about infringing on his rights. But we're not, honestly, I don't know what's in the Supreme Court docket. We ought to be pursuing this under 14th Amendment bases. We ought to be. We either will end up winning, which would be great, or we end up throwing ourselves against the wall of their hypocrisy and pointing it up. Kind of like that when you watched the Hunger Games and they had that invisible fence around everything, and then, you know, when you ran into it, then you could see where the wall was. That's exactly what we need to do. We need to show up that wall. We need to show up that wall of hypocrisy by saying, okay, any citizens deny to any person within his jurisdiction the equal protection of its laws. Jack Phillips should appeal that administrative law ruling all the way up to the Supreme Court, because they have abridged his rights. They have abridged his equal protection. He has become less than a citizen because they have told him that his rights do not matter. And this is where I come back to the Civil Rights Act. This is where I come back to the Civil Rights Act. I have talked about civil rights on this program before. Civil rights are those rights that an individual has when dealing within the civic realm, meaning with their government. Okay? Those are the rights that a person has when dealing with their government. And those are specific to that situation. That's what civil rights are. Civil rights are not some mysterious large grant of these, you know, you have a right to a living wage and you have a right to a house and you have a right to a job. You don't have those. Those are not civil rights, even though that's what those people call them. That's not what they are. Your civil rights are the rights to have equal protection under the laws, equal access to government entities, to government services as any other person. That is what a civil right is. That our government treats all of its citizens equally in terms of how it deals with them. That's what civil rights are. And so, yes, I do believe that as long as we're handing out marriage licenses, you can't deny them to anyone. The government does not get that right. But churches have every right to deny the sacrament of marriage to a same-sex couple. They have every right to do that. Jack Phillips has every right to decide whom he will and will not serve in his cake shop. Every right. We all have these rights. They cannot be infringed. And so when we're talking about gay marriage, yes, they should have that sanction. They should have that equal access under the law. They should get those same tax benefits, you know, whatever. They get the right to go through nasty divorces too. Yay. So, you know, I mean, that's all part of that. But that doesn't mean that they have the right to not be offended. That doesn't mean that they have the right to demand service from people who do not want to serve them. They do not get to demand that a Christian adoption agency who believes in placing children in married homes with heterosexual couples because they believe, according to their religion, that that is the best way to raise a child. And by the way, they're probably proven right through many eons of history. Not to say that homosexual couples are not raising wonderful children. I know that there are some. But a Christian adoption agency has the right to make that determination as to whom they believe will be the best parents. And the second that somebody points at the Hodges decision under the 14th Amendment and says, my rights supersede yours as a Christian organization to freely exercise your religion, we have violated the 14th Amendment. We have violated the First Amendment. We have violated the very spirit of the Constitution and the very spirit of this country by saying that some animals are more equal than others. And that's the problem. I hope you enjoyed that. Jay, I hope I answered your question. And if I didn't, write me. And I know you will. So, and if you want to find me on Facebook, facebook.com/grassrootsradiocolorado. Share the podcast with your friends. Last week, I actually hit the number 3 podcast in the nation. Number 3 conservative talk podcast. I've got to delineate how big this pond is. It's not huge, but 3, I mean, that was really cool. And I would love to make it to 2. So share it around grrc.podomatic.com. Email me, Chris, K-R-I-S @grassrootsradiocolorado.com. Love to hear from you. Thank you for listening to me. And remember, America is great because Americans are great. So go out there and be exceptional.